We begin the current daf, Masechta Bavas, daf Mem Tes. We begin on the fourth line down at the top of the Amud, where the Gemara goes back and mentions the halacha which was mentioned on the previous daf. That is, the Gemara was discussing Rav Huna's halacha of Tluy Bezavin Zvini Zavin. Someone gets forced and is compelled to make a sale, although it's an einus, but since he ultimately sold, and as we explained in the Gemara, there's two variables, he doesn't lose anything, and moreover, he gets the Yisurim away from himself, so he willingly goes ahead and he's a Gemar Makni, it is a valid sale. Now, because of that, the Gemara introduced a story which illustrated Rav Huna's halacha of Tloi Bezavin, but also there was the witnesses had signed both on the Ashkalta, which is the actual sale document, and also on a document of Maida. And on that, said Rav Huna, if they wouldn't have signed on the Maida, then even though the sale was forced, it would have been a sale, because Tloi Bezavin's been his oven. But since there was a Maida, so that Maida, which is a disclaimer saying what we're going to sign for the sale document is only because the guy's being forced, but really does not want it to be a sale, therefore that voids the Ashkalta, which is the sale document, and the Maida overpowers that. It's not going to be valid. That the Gemara asked, but how could you say that? But Rav Nachman said that when witnesses say either Aman Hoydivareinu, that although we signed on this document, it looks like a kosher document that this guy loaned this guy $1,000, but it was based on trust. It's going to be for future if he needs it. But that he trusted the lender, and now the lender wants to collect with it, so the witnesses say, hey, hold on, this loan never really happened. It was done on trust. Or if let's say they say Maida Hoydivareinu, that yeah, although this looks like a kosher document and we signed on it, but we had already made a disclaimer, and that's what the Gemara actually differentiates if that was in writing and that was beforehand, or if they're making the disclaimer now saying, wait, I want you to know. This guy came over to us right before and said he doesn't want to do this. So we're testifying that although this document looks like it's valid, it's really not. So on that side, Rav Nachman, in both these areas are the Einemanim. They're not believed. Now, there's actually two interpretations given by the Rashbam why that would be. Either because of the problem of kimin shehigad shuv ein lechazer magid. Once you said testimony, you cannot come at a later point in time and clarify and thus refute what you had originally said. So this document is like eidim she ksuv mishtar kimish nechkar reidusim bebezin. It's like it's already verified as if they had an oral testimony in court saying what's written in the document. Now you want to come and say it's not kosher. You're not believed to do that. Once you said testimony, you can't come back and then say a different testimony regarding that. Or another interpretation is because of there's a problem that you're doing something forbidden. For example, like by a manahay debereinu, where you're not allowed to really, it's an avla, to go ahead and write something which can be used inappropriately. And therefore, they're making themselves rishayim by saying that they had signed on an inappropriate document, and a person cannot be believed when he's saying that he's a wicked person. If we don't believe him when he's saying that it was namana. So that was Rav Nachman's halacha. So the Gemara quotes this and says, but there is an opinion that disagrees with Rav Nachman. Gufa, I'm Rav Nachman. He says by both these that we spoke about, Amanohay Devarenu, the witnesses say regarding this seemingly very kosher document, that our words were based on trust, and it's not really that there was a loan of $1,000 over here, Einaman, they're not believed. And also, Maidohay Devarenu, Einaman, but they say that our words were based on the previous disclaimer, although it looks like a kosher document, it was only because the guy was forced. Now, you don't know this, but we're telling you, they're not believed to invalidate the document in both these situations. However, Ma'abar Avashi, this is what the Gemara is introducing now, he disagrees. He says, Aman ha'idavareinu, if they say that our words were based on trust. So there he agrees to Rav Nachman, that they're not believed, as the Gemara will shortly explain the reason, because what's called shalainit and likasiv, it's not allowed to be written such a thing. As we explained previously, that one of the interpretations of the problem about Amana was, because altishkan balecha avla, because it's the witnesses are not allowed to sign on something inappropriate, and when they testify that we did sign on a document that was based on trust, they're not believed because in other mesam atzmei rasha, a person cannot make himself into a wicked person. Now, so therefore, even if the signatures are not being verified from somewhere else, which that would take away the whole pesha, so that would take away the whole namanus in the first place, they're not believed because again, a person cannot make himself into a wicked person. Now, but as Rashbam points out, regarding that other component, which we mentioned just before, which was spoken about in the previous staff on the top of the Amid, regarding that the problem would be because they're not allowed to uproot a validity of a document, because that's a problem of Kimin Sheket Shuvay in the Chayzer Magid, that actually Ma'abar Avashi was not concerned about. Because of that, if he would be, then actually his next halacha would be difficult. Because he says, Maida Hayu Devreinu, but if they do say that although it looks like a regular valid document, but you should just know that the guy had told us a disclaimer before and he doesn't really want to do it. He's just being forced, or else they'll do who knows what to him. So we sign for him as a favor, but really want you to know that's not kosher. There he says, Nemanim, they are believed. Tzatz Rashbam points out, obviously, it does not hold to the problem of Kivin Sheger Shuvin Chazer Magid, because that would be Chazer Magid, and yet we see that they're believed. So says the Gemara, my time, what's the reason for Mabra Avashi that it differentiates between these two cases? So the difference is because Shazer Nitin Likasiv, by the case of Maidahe Devarenu, that is something that they were allowed to write such a document. In other words, they were actually doing a mitzvah, because they were saving this guy who was being forced and they were beating him up. Who knows what they're going to do to him if he doesn't, quote, sell it. They're doing a mitzvah by signing on it. Now, so therefore, actually, even if their signatures are verified through other witnesses, they're still believed. Now, the reason for this is, as we mentioned before, is because this is not a problem of chayzer magid, as if they're saying a different testimony contradicting what they had originally said. Because actually, this is a totally different testimony. As the Gemara actually explains over there, in Mesechtas Gittin, which discusses this concept, that if, let's say, the witnesses say, yes, we did sign, but we just wanted to know that there was a stipulation, there was conditions attached to it, and those conditions were never met, so that's a different idea, and they're believed. So although they're agreeing that there is it's a kosher document, but it will not work, it will not be effective, because there's something else, which that could be, that's not contradicting what they had written and testified in the document, because they are testifying that it's a kosher document, but they're also testifying that he doesn't know him anything. Now, so therefore, then what would be considered a problem of Chazer Magid? That would be like the mission of their teachers over there, and of Yitchesim and Beis, when they say, we were Pasul, or we were honest. Witnesses are saying, we were Psulim at that time that we signed. We were minors. So then if their signatures are verified from somewhere else, they're not believed, because here they're actually going and invalidating the document itself, where they're saying that we were Pasul. There is something where then we don't believe and we Pasul their subsequent ages, because that's the problem of Chayzer Magid. You can't go ahead and retestify what you had already once testified already in the document. So, Maida is allowed to be written, and actually it's a mitzvah. But Vezela, Nitin Likasif, an Amana is not allowed to be written, because to the contrary, it could be used inappropriately, and one should not write such a document, and therefore, there, they don't have any Nemanis, they did not believe to say that they did that, because they can make themselves into a rush, and a person not believed when he's trying to incriminate himself in a testimony that he's giving. So again, that's why my Rav Ashi disagrees with Rav Nachman and says that by Madahi Devarenu, then they are Nemanim. Now the Gemara continues to Halacha of our Mishnah, again talking about different individuals, although they perform the Chazakah, and generally that says, we presume that it's a person. There are certain cases where we don't presume that it's theirs, even though they already established a Chazakah. One of them is Vleila ish chazaka benichzi ish ibchulu. Neither a husband, if he has a chazaka, let's say he took possession of his wife's nichzi milug, which are properties that are totally owned by the wife, even during the marriage. It's just that the husband has the rights to the payers. If let's say she inherited these properties from her father, and the husband has used this property uncontested for 3 years, it's not going to establish a chazaka for him to say, oh, you know why I have this for 3 years, because I bought it from my wife, I just lost the documentation. It's not true, because it's not normative for a woman to protest regarding her husband that takes possession of her properties and eats the payers, because since he's feeding her, so it's only normal that she would allow him to get her properties to use it for himself. No, that thing might actually ask Peshitta. It's pretty obvious that the husband, cannot claim that the reason why he's been using this property uncontested for 3 years is because he bought it from his wife. Because Kivin is le leperi, since based on the rabbinic injunction, which the Chacham were mesaken, that all the properties of a woman that are given the payers, the husband is allowed to eat the payers, the produce, or have its utility, because he has to redeem her if let's say she's taken as a captive. So it's those peiruhu de ka'achal, it's those produce that he's eating, but he doesn't have any rights in the actual land itself. So of course he doesn't have to protest, because everybody knows that the reason why he's using it, just like the svara of the sharecropper, everyone knows that it's because the husband has the rights to eat the payers. Now, this is not similar to mashkanta de sura, where we say that although it's a pledge, it's not really that the guy bought it, and the guy has the rights to eat the payers, that there the Gemara said that
the borrower, the original owner of the field, has to protest after during every 3 years that the person has it, there it's because maybe at the end of the time, the witnesses will not remember that originally it was given over to this lender as a mashke, and he'll be able to claim that I have it because I bought it. But by the properties of a wife to the husband, everybody knows that the husband has the rights to eat the peiros in his wife's property, and therefore, of course, not going to establish a chazaka when she's still alive. So what's the necessity of the Mishnah of actually teaching this halacha? So the Gemara says, you're right, loy tzricha, it's not necessary to say a husband in the regular wife's property, because that's obvious. Rather, it's talking about in the case, the cost of law, where the husband writes to the wife, dinu dvorm inli b'nechsayich. In other words, I do not have any rights in your nechsei milog. And even so, that's what the Mishnah is teaching, that the husband does not have a chazaka, because even though here he doesn't have the rights to the peiros, so why is he here using it? Oh, must be he bought it. No, because the wife is not particular about the husband, even if he's eating it not based on his rights. Right, based on his rights, he gave up those rights. But even so, a wife does not protest, and that does not establish his chazaka as if he bought it from his wife. Now, actually, the Gemara asks on this Gemara's answer. What are you saying the Chiddush of the Mishnah is talking about when he said din advarm ainli, that then it like removes his rights, and that's when the Chiddush is saying that even so if he's eating it, it's not going to establish chazaka. But that has the Gemara, if he writes din advarm ainli bin achsayach, my hava, what's going to be, it actually does not affect anything. It actually does not remove his rights. So how is there any more of a Chiddush in that case? Because Vatanya learned the Brayis that says, if someone says to his partner, someone that he has a shear in something, and he says, "Din dvarm einli al sadazu, I don't have any rights in this field, or ve'einli esik, but I have nothing to do with it, or v'yadi misalakis memen, my hand is removed from it." Says the Brayis, "Loy amar klum, he hasn't said anything, because the words that he used is not a terminology of gifting. In other words, when he's saying that I shouldn't have a portion in my shear." Or what do you mean you shouldn't have? You do. Until you tell your friend or someone else that my field will be given to you, my field is sold to you, my field is hefker to whoever wants it, until he says that, din advarm has no utility, has no validity, it's not saying anything. So therefore ask the Gemara, what are you saying the Chiddush in such a case that really doesn't do anything, it doesn't accomplish anything, and therefore it's really back to a regular husband and his wife's properties, which has no Chiddush. So the Gemara says, Amri lo deber b'yanai, was said in the Shiva of b'yanai, that Masnit in our Mishnah, the case that we're saying is a Chiddush, is Toma because of law, that he writes to this that we said, Din advarm einli b'nechsayich, I have no rights in your properties, is Toma when he writes it to Va'oida Arusa, when they're still engaged. Where that's actually before he gets the rights in his wife's properties. Where he has not yet married it in the produce until he gets married, as the Gemara concludes, where regarding something that a person inherits based on the Takanas Chachamim, he could uproot it if he stipulates before it actually comes to him, that in that situation when he says, I shouldn't have a portion in that money that's going to come to me based on the rabbinic injunction, where there, yes, the person could do that, and that din advarm ainli does work, because you cannot merit something to someone against his will, and it's not yet his. Once it's already his, you're right, that was the Gemara's question, din advarm doesn't take it away. But if it didn't yet come, and it's only something that's rabbinically going to come to him, whereas regarding biblical, as we'll see on Lamed Beis, where that's already considered his, but rabbinically, it's going to the Rabban wanted to be mezak to the person, the guy says, I don't want it, then that works. Okay, Rav Kahana. And it's like Rav Kahana that such a stipulation works. Because the Amr Rav Kahana, like Rav Kahana says, as you continue to Amid Beis, Nachla habol lo adam mimokam acher, regarding inheritance that comes to a person from somewhere else, meaning it's ultimately going to come to him, for example, like a rabbinic inheritance, as the Gemara is going to shortly explain, says Rav Kahana, adam masna, a person could stipulate before it happens, shalo yirishana, that he should not have that inheritance. For example, like he says, which our Gemara was saying, din advarm ainli, I don't have any rights regarding this inheritance that's ultimately going to come to me. In other words, I don't want to have din advarm. Now that works, ukedir Rava, like Rav had said. In other words, what do you mean? And what type of inheritance does a preempted stipulation work? That is by a type of inheritance that's coming from a takanas chacham, like Rav has said. But as we just mentioned before, but regarding a biblical inheritance. So for example, let's say he says, Din dvam einli birushas avi kishayamas. Let's say someone says that I shouldn't have any rights to my father's inheritance when he passes away. There actually, the stipulation would not work, because by default, it is his, because that's what biblical law does. That the Torah creates the reality that it does become the person's, unless he gifts it away to someone else in the terminology of gifting. But din dvam would not work. But it does work by takanas chachamim, which the Gemara is going to conclude, that's exactly what our Mishnah is talking about. The husband's rights and his wife's peiros are rabbinic rights.
So that type of inheritance, those type of rights that are going to come, meaning when, let's say, they're still engaged, that it works to preempt and say, din advarm, and that it will not come to. Where do we find this concept by Rava? Because the Amar Rava, like Rava said, whoever says, I do not want this takana that the Chacham made for my benefit, like for example, in this type of a case, which Gemara shortly is going to explain what was the Zeis that they were talking about, which is rabbinic, then they listened to him, because you cannot, the Chacham cannot merit someone to something against his will. Because if he's not concerned for the gift, for the favor that the Chacham are doing for him, so they didn't want to give it to him forcibly. The whole reason why they were doing it for that person's favor, if the person doesn't want it and it didn't happen yet, then Din Advarim would avoid it. So explains the Gemara, my kagoin zois. In other words, what takans Chacham were they talking about in the base medrash when Rava said on it, oh, whoever says I don't want a takans Chacham like this one that we're discussing here, then we listen to him. What was the case talking about? Says the Gemara Kad Rav Huna Amar Rav, like Rav Huna Amar Rav. In other words, it was talking about the takana of mezainus, which is providing sustenance that the husband's obligated for his wife. It was regarding that takana chacham that they were talking about in the base of Medrash. And he then takes her earnings when she goes to work, he takes that in place of the fact that he has to support her and feed her. Where the Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, he said, Yechayla Isha Shetem Lebala, a wife could tell her husband, Eini Nezenes Ve'eini Eisa. I'm not going to get fed from you, but neither now are my earnings going to go to you. Now, it was regarding that Rava said, for example, like this type of a takana, with a chomor misakin, that the woman, for her good, for her benefit, that the husband has to feed her and take care of her, if she says, I don't want this takana chacham, in this takana that they made for my favor, because for me, it's actually not a favor. I earn more than what my husband goes and feeds me and takes care of me. I'd rather provide myself and all my work go to myself. That's what the Gemara is saying, is that we listened to her, and it was regarding that Rav Huna Amar Rav said that a woman could say to her husband, I'm not going to get fed from you, and neither is my work going to go to you. My earnings are going to go to my old bank account. As the Gemara says, what's the reason for this? It's because this opinion holds that the primary takana was the mezainus. In other words, the Chacham, when they stepped in to make these takanas, their primary concern was for the husband to have to feed the woman under all situations, whether she goes to work or if she doesn't go to work. Now, afterwards, they then instituted that since the husband has to feed the wife, when she goes to work, her earnings go to the husband so that there shouldn't be what's called Ava, where he's going to have enmity. So, what is it? I have to feed her, and she goes to work, and she has her own bank account, and I don't get that? Now, but since originally it was instituted for her favor, which is that she should have mezainah, she should have food. Now, if she uproots that and says, well, I don't want this takana, I'm not concerned for that because I make more myself, then she's allowed to do that. Now, once she uproots the takana of the mezainah is going to her, then also then by default, the consequence of that is that her earnings that was supposed to go to the husband is by default voided. Because if she's not taking any mezainah, then the husband's not going to take her maisi daim, which is the whole purpose of, because of she's taking, so he has to get two, which is because of Ava. Now that is a case of an inheritance that comes to a person at a later point in time, meaning the mezainis that the woman gets every single day. If she says today, I don't want tomorrow and the day after, which are stuff that are rabbinically going to come, those type of nachlis, she has the right to do that. Now that's what the Gemara was saying. The same thing is in regards to halacha of our Mishnah. When you have payrus of nichsi miluk, which is a chamor mesakin for the husband, that he gets the payrus and the utility of the fields, in place of because he has to redeem her from captivity, all the more so is the Gemara saying that if he says, I don't want to redeem her if she's taken as a captive, and I'm not concerned for the payrus nichsi miluk, which they instituted that I should get in place of redeeming her, where there, of course, that stipulation would help when they were still engaged, because he has not yet merited the land for its payrus. Now, it was regarding that type of a case that the Mishnah had to teach us that the husband does not have a chazak in his wife's nechasim to say that, why do you think I have this for the past 3 years? I bought it. No. Even though he wrote to her when they were still engaged, that he's not going to take any of her payrus, and in such a situation like we just described, that takes effect, because it's a nachla derabanan that didn't yet come, and he could say din advarim ainli, and that would avoid it coming to him. Even so, if she's silent and she doesn't protest when her husband's using her property for more than 3 years, she could say that nachas ruach asisi lebayli. I wanted my husband. I care about my husband liking me, and I just wanted to do him a favor, and that's why I was silent. But I never sold it to him. It's not the reason why I was silent. Which usually, if a person's not meicha, why aren't you meicha? Obviously, proves that, what do you mean I wasn't meicha? It's my husband. So even though he had no rights to it, but I didn't want to say anything, and therefore that's not going to establish a chazaka. That was the halacha of our Mishnah.
Now, however, it's on this that the Gemara asks. But it sounds like that from the fact that the Mishnah says that ein le'ish chazaka, that a man does not have a chazaka in his wife's nichsi milug, meaning that the chazaka is not going to help to establish that there was a sale here. But it sounds like, ha-ra'aya, but if let's say he has proof from witnesses or in the document that yes, that then actually it would seem like that would help to validate that there was a sale over here. And that is if the wife sold him her nichsi milug, because, and we know that happened because there are witnesses who could testify, that then it would be considered the husband has acquired his wife's nichsi milug properties from her. Now that has to come up, but why? Tema, let the wife say the same idea, even if there was actual sale done. Nachas ruach asisi labayli, I was just doing a favor to my husband that I sold it to him only because that he shouldn't get angry at me, because I knew he really wanted this and he's going to start screaming, but I never had the intention to sell it to him. Now, in other words, this is not comparable to what we said in the previous daf of Rav Huna's halach of tlui b'zavin zvine zvine, where if someone's forced to sell it, we say it is considered a sale. That's because since the person has a situation of einus, someone's hurting them and they're getting paid for it, so then we say the gomer makne. But here, there's no einus, that it's not real einus. She doesn't want her husband to be upset at her, but he's not punching and hurting her. That there, we're not going to say that she's gomer makne. So therefore, why can't she claim that, no, even though I sold it to him, I didn't really want to sell it to him, and therefore it's not a valid sale, I just didn't want him to be upset at me. Because the Gemara says we actually find such a precedent, because Milaytzanan, didn't we learn the Mishnah Masechet Ksubas, that when the woman comes with such a claim, that she could say, when let's say other people bought it from her husband, and then they come and they buy from her, and she could say, look, although I sold it to you, I only did it because I didn't want my husband to be upset, but not that I really wanted to sell. So here when she's selling it to her husband himself, for sure she could say it's because I didn't want him to be upset because he wanted to buy it from me, even if, as we see in Mishnah Ksubas, even if someone else bought it from him and then from her, even there she could say, I just wanted my husband to be okay with me, but I didn't really mean to sell it. As the Mishnah says in Ksubas, lakach min ha'ish, if someone buys a piece of property from the husband. Now, the halacha is that all the properties of the husband have a lien to the Ksuba that he owes to his wife, which is if, let's say, today or the next day, if he dies or if he divorces her, she could collect from any of the people that bought from the time they got married, from the properties, if there's no available properties by her husband when she gets divorced or when he dies. Because that's what he writes during the ksuba. Kol nichsei achroin varvan l'ksuba sayach. All my properties are responsible and are guarantees for your ksuba. As the Gemara says, himself, ksuba is something alf and alf. So because of that, when someone bought a property from the husband, v'chazer, this consumer then went back, v'lakach min ha'isha. Then he double bought it, meaning he gave a little bit amount of money to the wife to say, okay, you also sell it to me. Now the reason why he would do this is because so that the wife should not be allowed to go ahead and collect her debt of the ksuba from the properties, because it's after the time that they got married, and if there's no available properties, she'll be able to go and collect from him. So not only did he buy it from the husband, he then went to the wife and said, I want to buy from you too. Says the Mishnah, mekhei batel, that is a void sale. Now, as Rosh Rama explains, it doesn't mean it's a totally void sale. Because as long as the husband's alive, so then this consumer could go ahead and use the field and consume all the utility and the produce, because the one who sold it to him was with this intention that as long as he does not divorce the wife, it has not yet come a time for her to collect her ksuba. Because this Mishnah is talking about all the properties that the husband has. And for that, the husband still owns it. Of course, it's a valid sale for that time period. Rather, what it's saying is that, however, that but the wife has a shibud, has a lien on that, where she could go ahead and collect from it when it comes a time for her to collect her ksuba, which is only after the husband dies or after the husband divorces her. So therefore, says Rashbam, when the Mishnah says that the mekech is batel, it's a void sale, it means not regards to what he bought from the husband, but rather what he went and then subsequently bought from the wife. Meaning, that transaction that he made to buy additionally from the wife, that's void. In other words, so when she comes to collect her ksuba after the husband died or that he divorced her, she could collect from this guy, because she could say, you're right, although I also sold it to you, I only did it because I wanted my husband to be okay with me, and where he already sold this properties that I had a lien on me. So I also went along with it, because I didn't want him to be upset with me. But I never concluded that I really wanted to sell it. And therefore, it's not going to be valid, and she could collect her ksuba from this guy. Says the Gemara, Alma Amra Nachas Ruach Asis Lebal. You see that the woman could say, even in a secondary way, that I only sold it because I wanted to do a favor to my husband. I never really wanted to sell it. I just didn't want him to be upset with me. Hachanami teima nachas ruach asisi labali. So why don't you say the same thing, especially so when the husband says, I really want this wife. I really want this field for myself. I want it. Can you sell it to me? She doesn't really want to sell it. She didn't want to sell it to this guy that bought it from him. And yet we say when she does, we consider it not a sale. So from the husband directly, when he wants to buy it, it also should not be considered. So why is the Mishnah saying that when the husband's machzik b'nechsei milug of his isha, it's not considered chazaka? But it sounds like, but if he had to have a direct proof that he bought it from her, the whole point of a chazaka is it's an indirect way of proving that he bought it. So that will not work because we say, okay, she wasn't meicha because the husband, she's not going to protest. But it sounds like he has direct proof it would work. But why would it work? She could say, I only sold it to him because I didn't want him to be upset with me, like we see in that Mishnah, Masechet Ketubos. Says the Gemara, no. Ha'itma Allah, we had said, regarding that Mishnah and that idea of Chazav Lakham and the Isha, when that guy who bought it from the husband, who then subsequently went and bought it from the wife, that Amar Rav Barfuna, he said, Loi Nitzrucha, it wasn't necessary for the Mishnah there to teach that that Mekach that he bought from the wife is going to be batal. That, said Rabbi Avuna, was Ela Ba'isin Gimel Sadis. It was only talking about the following three fields that have a very high intensity level of a shibud, of a lien, that the wife has on the husband more than all his other properties. In other words, those are properties that she relies on more than the rest of all his properties. So on that, says Rabbi Avuna, it was regarding those three fields. That's what the Mishnah was saying, that the mekach that this consumer then went and subsequently bought it from the wife, that's going to be void, because such properties, she for sure does not have intention to sell it. And there is where the claim works, where she says, I only did it for nachas ruach labayli. Which Gemara Shulda is going to explain, what is that excluding? What would not be considered that it's mekach batal? What would be considered that it would be a mekach kaim? The first thing we're going to explain is, what are these three fields? So achas, one of these three fields, is when he takes a field and he explicitly puts a lien on it, and he mentions that field in the document of the ksuba. Where shekasav la b'ksuba, he writes it in the ksuba document that he's creating a shibud for her on that field, and it's regarding that field that she relies on more than all the other properties that he has. Now, however, it's important to know that actually all his properties all have an equal lien on them, because that's what he writes in the ksuba. Kol nichsecher and the ksuba sayach. All my properties are indebted to your ksuba. It's just that he doesn't mention and explicitly put all of them in the document, but only this one he put in. So although really in halacha it doesn't make a difference, but that's what's written in Ksuba, and that she relies on more. So that's one of those types of fields. As we continue on top of Nunim and Aleph, the second one is V'acha sheyichel lo b'ksubasa. A different one is a field that if he designated for her Ksuba, in other words, unlike the first case, this wasn't written in the Shtar Ksuba itself. It's just at a later point in time when they were married, he then designated his wife, you know, that's your field that you know you're going to be able to collect your ksuba from, and he makes it into what's called an apaitiki, which that's designated under all circumstances you'll be able to collect from that one. Now again, here it's the same idea. All his fields are meshubatar already in the document of the ksuba. It's just that she's more confident, relies on that one because that's the one that was designated for her in front of witnesses. And the achas, the third field that we're describing, one of them is shechnis le shum mishalom, where if she brought a field from her father's property, meaning her father gave her when she got married to bring into the marriage, and it was evaluated upon the marriage, and the value of that field was written in the document of the ksuba that the husband's accepting all monetary responsibility and insurance for that field. That's what's known in halachic terminology of nichsi tzern barzel, where because if the value goes down, it's the husband's loss. If the value goes up, it's his gain. And it's the exact amount that the husband has to give to the wife when she leaves the union, where again, if it goes up, it's the husband's gain, if it goes down, it's the husband's loss. Where they write in the ksuba, v'dan the dunya, and this is the dowry, the analis la mebeis avu that was brought to from this woman, from her father's household, kach v'kach mam, this amount of money, which sach hakol, kibul lov v'chasim, kach v'kach nan, and the chasim accepts upon himself this amount of money for the actual value of these nifsi term basel, which is the property that gets evaluated the moment that she brings it into the marriage, and he has to give it to her, that exact amount, when they leave the marriage. Now, this field is also Meshubatar with just as equal as all the other properties of the husband. It's again, but this is just like the first two cases, the wife is just more confident on this more than all the other ones for her lien, because since she brought this in from her father's property, so she's like has more of an attachment to that, as in the first two cases.
Now, on that says the Gemara, it's from these three fields that if this consumer went and after buying it from the husband, he went and bought it from the wife, that's what says Rabbi Avunda, the Mishnah was telling us that mekech that he bought from the wife is going to be void. Because there, for sure, she's going to say, oh, well, nachas ruach hasisa labayli. This is, she relies on the whole kasuba. Of course she doesn't want to sell it. She just doesn't want her husband to be upset with her. So it's regarding those three fields that we say the mekech is batal. Now, regarding this point, the one who's explaining this himself goes and concludes and explains his teretz, and he says, what do you mean? And lemu'ute mai. In other words, what is that excluding when we're saying that the halacha mekach batal is on these three fields and not in the other fields? What is being excluded where there we would say that it's not a mekach batal, but rather it would be a valid mekach that he subsequently bought from the wife, this property that he bought from the husband? Says the Gemara, if you would entertain to say that that's excluding the other properties of the husband, which are meshubatar. In other words, if he goes and buys it from the husband, and then he goes and buys it from the wife, then there you want to infer and say that there the sale would be valid, and that she cannot say, I only went and subsequently sold it because I'm nachas ruach hasis labayli. And it's that Rabbi Avunda was saying, that lo nitzucha, that it's only for, in other words, that this Mishnah was only talking about by the it wasn't talking about other properties, it was only talking about these three fields, because since they're meshubata so much, which they're the ones that are designated to her, oh, for sure she definitely would not have agreed to sell it. And it was just because she wants her husband to be okay with her. But by other fields, that there it's not so much indebted to her, because these were not specifically singled out to be designated for her. Oh, there she conclusively went and then subsequently sold it. And there she cannot say nachas ruach hasis labayli, and then it would be a valid sale. But on that thing Gemara asked, what do you mean? To the contrary, kol shekein, in those cases, for sure she should be allowed to say, I only sold because of nachas ruach hasis labayli, because the havila eva, in those situations, if she would not subsequently sell it to the consumer who already bought it from the husband, there would be hatred. Because there, for sure we should say, the mekach should be batal, and that the woman should be allowed to collect her ksuba from it when she gets divorced and when her husband dies. Because if she would not subsequently write to the lekech that I'm also part of the sale, then the Amar law, then their husband would tell her, wait a second, why are you not agreeing when he wants to buy from you? He's willing to give us another $50 if you just signed that I'm selling it too. Why are you not doing that? Oh, I know why. You're thinking you can't wait to collect your dowry from me, and you're worried, oh my, is my dowry going to be around? You're waiting till I drop dead, or I'm going to divorce you, and therefore you don't allow any me to sell any of my properties to anybody. Why not? This is a random piece of my properties. You hear something and not letting me sell it? So the wife says, I have to agree to it, because or else he's going to accuse me of thinking I can't wait till he dies or until I get divorced. Now, in contrast to those three fields, the other husband wouldn't say that. He wouldn't say, well, why aren't you selling it? Because since he designated those fields for her ksuba, so it makes sense that she would be able to contest it. Why are you selling this? You told me that this is going to be the field for my ksuba. So actually, to the contrary, that's the chiddush that Rabbi Rav Huna is saying when he says, loy nitzrucha, is that this is the Mishnah said, mekach batal. I don't have to tell you regarding all the other properties with her. It's obvious that she could say nachas ruach hasis labayli, that I only did it because my husband shouldn't be upset with me, because or else he's going to say, hey, what, you think about getting divorced already? You think about that I'm dying already? You're worried about your ksuba? But on that he was saying that no, even these three fields, he cannot say this because he realizes that this is sacred for her. It was designated for a ksuba. Even so, it's going to be void. Because ultimately, since they're not really her field, they're really the husband's, so she could say, I did it only as a favor for my husband. But therefore, says the Gemara, but what is being excluded? Where would you say that the Mekach would be Kayim? But to the contrary, these two both have svaras why she could be allowed to say that I only did it for Nachas Ruach for my husband. So what would be the case when we would say it would be Kayim? Elarela says the Gemara, Lema'utei Nichsei Milug. Rabbi Rav Huna was coming to exclude by when it's the wife's own nichsei milug, where there, if that's where, if what he's explaining in halacha, the Mishnah over there in Ksubis, is that if this consumer bought from the husband and then he went and bought it from the wife, there that subsequent buying from the wife would be a valid sale, because since it's her own properties, she's not afraid of the husband. She could most definitely protest from her husband not to sell it. You don't own this. You just get the payers. I own the properties. And there she cannot say, nachas ruach hasis labayli. So that's what he's explaining is excluded when he says it's only these three fields, meaning he's saying it's even in those three fields, not only by regular properties, where she could say, nachas ruach hasis labayli. But what, and therefore the mekach is batal. When would it be mekach kaim? It's regarding the nichsei milug. Where there, why would you allow him to do it? Obviously, because you really agreed to go ahead and sell it. And that's what the Gemara says. That's the same thing that explains the halacha of our Mishnah. When we said that the husband does not have a chazakah in his wife's property, which the inference we said was that haraya, yes, but if he has proof that it was actual sale, then it's considered as if he did buy it from the wife, that's tumah by nichsi milug, as we just explained in the explanation of that Mishnah Masechta Ksubos, where since the properties are hers, this she can't say, oh, nachas tzricha sisal bala, I don't want him to be upset with me. Upset with me? That's an abusive relationship. That doesn't make sense. That everyone could respect that that's your own things, and therefore, that's why the inference is from our Mishnah that yes, since we explained that we're talking about the nichsi milug of the wife, where there it's not going to establish a chazaka because a wife lets a husband use it. But if there's the actual proof, if we have witnesses that say that the wife sold it, we saw the actual sale of the wife to the husband, then of course it would be. But why? Why can't she say, Nachas Ruch HaSisi L'Bayli? Just like we explained in the Mishnah Masechta Ksubos. We only say that by things where she doesn't have full ownership, full rights, even things which are designated, she can say, okay, it's not mine, so the husband's allowed to do it. I might be a little upset, and maybe I didn't really want to do it. Therefore, it's going to be Mekach is Batel, but she would go ahead and has that claim of Nachas Ruch HaSisi L'Bayli. But that says the Gemara, but regarding Nichsi Milug, then you don't say Nachas Ruch HaSisi L'Bayli, because it's yours. If you went ahead with it, as in the Mishnah Masechta Ksubos, that means you really were agreeable to sell to that other person, and it is going to be a valid sale. So to now Mishnah with Toma Nichsi Milug, if there was Haraya, if there was a proof of an actual sale, then there would be a valid sale, and the husband actually did buy and get it, the Nichsi Milug of his wife, and she cannot say that I was just doing it Nachas Ruach, because that's not Nachas Ruach. That's your thing. When it's something that your husband and he has rights and she gave it to you, maybe that's one thing. But when something that you own, that's not Nachas Ruach. If you did it, it means you really went ahead and you sold it to the husband, and therefore it's going to be his.